Hello and welcome to the DC Insider Employer Update Podcast. This podcast updates you with the expertise and current insight of the Washington, D.C.-based attorneys from the Fortney Scott Law Firm. Each episode highlights the most important issues and analysis that employers need to know in order to understand and react to key federal developments affecting their business. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as legal advice on any subject matter. Now let's turn it over to our host, David Fortney.
Hey everyone, David Fortney again. Welcome to another edition of DC Insider Employer Update Podcast. We've got the gang together again, and I'm looking forward to having another great discussion with both Bert Fishman. Hey Bert.
Hi David, it's good to be back.
Sure is. And Nita also. Nita, how are you today?
I'm doing great today.
Well, listen, we want to spend some time. The federal fiscal year has just ended, and there are a couple of points that have really kind of captured us that we have been focusing on. First is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, or EEOC. As they move into the new fiscal year, we'd like to unpack them a little bit. They're a bit of an agency in flux in terms of nominees, in terms of establishing their new strategic enforcement priorities, and a host of things going on. It's an agency that hasn't quite caught the traction that other agencies have. It's in part, I think, because of the nominees, but where the agency is. So we'd like to spend the first part just doing an update on the EEOC and unpacking that. Then the second, and there is a relationship here because this implicates one of the EEOC's key points, is artificial intelligence or AI. What the federal agencies particularly are doing on that, it is a landscape that's beginning to change. We have certainly been very closely involved in a number of AI-related developments, and there's a lot going on in the artificial intelligence space that will impact employers. So those are the two topics. So I want to jump into them. And let's start with the whole EEOC about the, you know, it is an agency in flux, changes both in enforcement strategy as well as personnel. Nita, let's get down to some nuts and bolts. EEOC operations.
Absolutely, David. This has been an interesting time for EEOC. I know that Bert's going to talk a little bit with us later about what's really going on with a third Democratic commissioner. But for the short term, we have the former chair, Janet Dillon, who is still on. Her term has ended, but she can continue on the EEOC till her replacement is actually confirmed or the end of the congressional year, which will be early January, if I recall correctly. Right now, you have three Republicans and two Democrats. The two Democrats include the chair, Charlotte Burroughs, and the vice chair. One of the things that's been going on is there's been the Republicans are very unhappy with the way that Chair Burroughs has been handling activity at the EEOC because she cannot get the Biden administration and what she wants to move forward. In response to some activity that Chair Burroughs was engaged in, specifically issuing guidance around the Bostock decision, there was an op-ed issued by Commissioner Dillon and Keith Sonderling, which basically said that Chair Burroughs was not following the requirements of the EEOC and that she was not handling the EEOC the way it should be. It was very unusual. I don't think I've ever seen commissioners issue that kind of op-ed in the Wall Street Journal or anywhere else. And you know, David, that was followed up with a decision that just came down on Saturday, back to the Bostock guidance that was issued. The guidance was issued in June of last year on the anniversary of the Bostock decision, which said that the Title VII did cover gender identity and sexual orientation. In that Supreme Court decision, however, the majority made it clear that that was all it was doing. It was not getting into issues around transgender surgery and pronouns and so forth and so on. Texas District Court, Northern District of Texas, just issued a decision on Saturday that basically blasted that particular guidance with both barrels, finding that it was not done properly. And I think that was a very interesting decision, which reinforced the op-ed that was issued by Janet and Keith.
Sure did. I've never seen that before where sitting commissioners are publishing op-eds criticizing and complaining that there wasn't a lack of either proper voting and approval, and basically accusing the chair of unilaterally promulgating and undertaking actions that should be subject to commission vote. And of course, with three Republicans, the chair doesn't have those votes. And Nita, as you point out, that district court in Texas on October 1 just frankly agreed with the op-ed that those commissioners published. Well, Bert, isn't the answer to Chair Burrows, let's change out some personnel here. Let's see if I can get some votes. And didn't the president have that answer waiting for her?
Well, he did, but he was kind of slow in using it. And Nita's already pointed out there's an anomaly in the EEOC procedures. If the president had waited till the Chairman Dillon term actually ended, she would have had to leave the commission and then he could have nominated someone. But it's almost self-inflicted harm. He nominated someone before her term expired, which gives Ms. Dillon a chance to stay, as Nita pointed out, till the end of the congressional term. But that is kind of beside the point because there are nominees. There's a nominee for general counsel. There's a nominee for the commission. But this is an election year, so the administration and Congress were even more pulled in various directions than usual. After the August recess, they all went out to campaign. They came back in September, passed a budget continuing resolution and little else. And now, surprise, surprise, they're out for 6 weeks to do more campaigning for the midterms. And that leaves very little time to focus on these very long-awaited nominations. The first is for the general counsel, which connects to the litigation strategy that David mentioned. Carla Gilbride was expected to be confirmed. There doesn't seem to have been much opposition, but the Senate never scheduled a vote, and now we'll have to wait till mid-November at least, probably later. More importantly, Kalpana Kodagal was nominated in April, I think, to be the third Democratic commissioner. And that would have opened the door to a raft of Democratic EEOC actions, ranging from the progressive, which would be new sex harassment regulations, to the bitterly controversial. We've already talked about the pay data collection process. And Kodagal is a predictably progressive nominee, but her particular background and her particular positions are of almost no significance to the opposition, other than the simple fact that she would provide the third Democratic vote, and the outcome of the midterms may in fact be involved. Nita, you mentioned some of the things that are in abeyance waiting for this third commissioner. What are some of those?
Well, I think most importantly, really, is them to be able to roll out any of Biden's proposed agenda for EEOC. They really have done very little, you know, as you just mentioned, all of the things. And I think, David, one of the interesting pieces, well, first of all, David is going to talk in a minute about the food fight that occurred at the hearing at which he testified. And I think the agency is just unable to work together. And with frustration, I think Chair Burrows has moved forward on some things and has completely, shall we say, alienated her three Republican colleagues.
Just to put a period at the end of this sentence, just so folks can focus on what we're talking about. Sex harassment regulations have been pending for like 5 or 6 years. They're in abeyance. Obviously, the pay data collection is in abeyance, the litigation strategy. Those are all things that are pending, and we'll wait to see what happens.
Well, one of the things that the agency has started working on is its 5-year enforcement plan and the enforcement priorities, which again, historically does require a commission vote. So the thought was, I think that Chair Burrows had, was she would begin working on this. And she's had several public hearings, including one in Buffalo, where she received input. And her third and what's scheduled to be announced as its final hearing occurred at the end of October in Washington, D.C. And I, on behalf of the Institute for Workplace Equality, was one of the witnesses there. And it was an opportunity for stakeholders, not many representing employers' interests, I might add, but there were some, to put forward what they believe the commission should be focusing on, what would be helpful for the commission to move forward with. In the case, in terms of what I addressed, was specifically with respect to the National Academy of Sciences recommendations, which we have discussed in detail on the collection of pay data, that the commission needs to go slowly, needs to consider and evaluate the recommendations, needs to conduct a pilot program, needs to deal with data security, and needs to really be the lead in how it conducts itself vis-a-vis other federal agencies that are also involved in this space. That was one very important point. The second point that we talked a lot about at the enforcement strategy session was artificial intelligence, which the commission has been working on, but not perhaps as robustly as many in the community thought they would be or think they should be. And so with that, because we're going to talk more about the EEOC's enforcement strategy once that gets finalized, but I think for the reasons that Bert and Nita have discussed, that's going to be out in about third week, fourth week of November, it appears at this point, depending on when the Senate actually votes on nominees.
So David, back on our issue with the commissioners, there was, at the beginning of your hearing, before anyone was able to testify, there was a big fight over whether or not this enforcement priorities would be published in the Federal Register or not. And they had a bit in front of everyone. They voted, obviously, 3 Republicans to 2 Democrats to publish it in the Federal Register. And that in and of itself was fine, but it was the way it was handled was very awkward, I thought. How was it in the room?
It was tense at several points. The chair, Chair Burrows, said, you know, this was not to be part of this meeting. This was not, you know, part of what is agendaed for this meeting. But in a very, you know, kind of by the book, Robert's Rules of Order fashion, Commissioner Dillon, former Chair Dillon, said, no, the rules of order now require, since we have convened as a commission, once there's a formal motion that's been put forward, which was Commissioner Lucas put the motion forward, it has to be considered, it's been seconded, it has to be debated, and then it has to be voted on. So after a fair amount of colloquy on whether this would or wouldn't go forward, Commissioner Lucas, who, by the way, having been on the commission for almost 18 months, this was her first public meeting as a commissioner. They haven't been meeting. But after it ultimately was voted on, of course, all 3 Republicans voted, as Nita said, that it had to be published in the Federal Register and, you know, full sunshine process. Ultimately, the vice chair, Jocelyn Samuels, as well as the chair, Charlotte Burrows, all voted in favor of the commission, of the motion, I should say. So, but it did expose those tensions. And I think it goes back to the Wall Street Journal op-ed, it goes to this most recent district court decision. The commission has some serious rifts in it.
Just a quick update, David. That was actually September the 22nd. I realize it feels like the year is running by, yeah. But that was when you testified.
Well, let's move on, because I mentioned that in the strategic enforcement priorities, one of the issues that we referenced was artificial intelligence. And of course, I want to take a moment because most employers, whether they know it or not, are using AI as part of their hiring process. And the use of artificial intelligence, as defined by the EEOC in a recent press release, includes both artificial intelligence as well as algorithmic decision-making tools that are used for employment selection, hiring, promotion, assessment of candidates, a wide range of things. And what we have certainly seen in our practices is, particularly during COVID, when many functions went virtual and left the office, that the use of AI tools has expanded significantly. All right, how does that relate to EEOC? Because it is a longstanding employment practice, and that the EEOC, as far back as 2016, when it held a hearing, and I guess we're showing the age of this issue, at that point, it was called big data. And then EEOC Chair Vicki Lipnick convened a hearing in which there was very detailed discussion of, basically, that was, what is AI? How does it work? Now, I think it's starting to evolve a little further as the parties look at it, and they have announced at least a new initiative called the HIRE Initiative. And the HIRE Initiative really is focusing on, both by EEOC and OFCCP. So it's intended to be a coordinated effort by the agencies to really focus on how hiring decisions and employment decisions are being made using AI and these big data tools. There's been several public hearings that have been held. And as I indicated, one of the points that I thought was important as they developed the strategic plan is, well, what are you going to do with it? And specifically, what about the uniform guidelines, which is in terms of an employment selection tool, what employers can use to what is called validate or demonstrate that it's permitted legally. It's a legal safe harbor. Can we find ways of using the uniform guidelines to validate AI selection tools? And just to put a little note out there, we're working very hard on that independently. We've told the commission about this, that we have the Institute for Workplace Equality with its own technical advisory committee, and former Chair Lipnick is working on that. Nita.
Just to mention a couple of the items, I mean, we kind of know what AI is and how it's being used, right. But OFCCP and EEOC, as part of their higher initiative, held a roundtable on September the 13th and had a bunch of experts talk, basically saying that AI is broader than employers realize, that digital divide is a huge issue for people of color. They're using personality assessments built off the current workforce, which often is white or male. And there are ads out there now able to target based on age and geographic areas. Video interviews, EEOC has already issued some guidance around disability and the fact that you need to keep in mind what individuals with disabilities can do around video interviews. Assessments by facial recognition and voice recognition can be discriminatory. And finally, our favorite, personality assessments and gamified assessments, which are being targeted there compared to the current workforce, which may exclude individuals of color or other underrepresented members of the community.
So there's this big basket of these AI issues and how they're increasingly being used in the workplace for workplace decisions. We've got EEOC and OFCCP beginning to focus on it through this initiative, the Hire Initiative. One of the points that we did make in the emphasis on the strategic enforcement plan is, in addition to those two key workplace agencies, other agencies are getting involved in this. One was the federal level, the Federal Trade Commission, FTC. They want to regulate this. We need to make sure that EEOC gets that coordinated. But Bert, the states, they're not sitting around waiting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess I have to show my likeness for vaudeville comedians, because one of them used to have a signature line of everyone's getting into the act. And that is exactly what's happening. The states and even cities, and I'll talk about some cities, New York and Washington, are so impatient with the pace of federal regulation that they are now, well, New York has already passed and DC has proposed an act regulating the use of just about any mechanical or electrical means, very poorly defined, that displaces human discretion in any employment decision. It is a mess because of different variations and different definitions. At least two things are clear. One is there is confusion or misunderstanding about how AI is being used or could be used in employment selection. And there is widespread impatience for some kind of regulation. And it's pretty clear that the EEOC is left behind. Be on the lookout in October 24th, New York, which has passed a law, will be holding a public hearing on its regulations. There are so many facets of the bill that there is confusion about even who's covered. But the point is, the federal government had best start laying some guidelines, or else we're going to have complete chaos state by state and even city by city.
That's exactly right. And multi-state, multi-jurisdiction employers, this is the nightmare scenario. Some of these requirements are that you have to publicize if you're using AI, you have to have outside experts look at your AI tools and certify that they're A-OK, not even clear what that is. Then we've got the uniform guideline issue that I mentioned going on. So this is an area that most employers, I think employers maybe 90 days ago thought, oh, we can kind of let the dust settle, then we'll move forward on this. It's not going to work in a nice, tidy fashion like this. The states are going to be shooting off. EEOC is going to be desperately trying to catch up, it appears, peddling hard with OFCCP, which has great insights into audits of federal contractors. And this is supposed to be a priority for them, too. So I think we're going to see all of that over the next couple of months, a lot of AI developments.
Yeah. And there's one thing that we should point out just very quickly is that AI itself, because of its learning capacities, is constantly changing. It's not static. It's not like a pen and pencil test. So the fact that we need some evolving guidelines is even, you know, it's just manifest.
Correct. Well, one of the things that we are looking forward to and working very hard on is in November, we are going to be issuing the Technical Advisory Committee report. And we are specifically going to address how AI tools can be assessed under the uniform guidelines and the application of the uniform guidelines to AI tools. And with Chair Lipnick and a commission comprised of just about 45 to 50, I'm forgetting the exact number here, but of a wide range of subject matter experts, IO psychologists, lawyers, you know, economists, you name it, we've got them all of all stripes on this commission. And indeed, the government agencies have told us they're waiting for these recommendations as kind of a launching pad for their efforts. So everyone's pedaling hard to get things going here, and employers need to pay attention and stay dialed in. That is a very important point. Well, look, our time is close on this. This has been, a really great discussion on both EEOC and AI. Those are not disparate or unrelated topics. They're very related, but they each are quite broad and changing. Well, let's hit some quick takeaways. Bert, I'm going to start with you.
Let me throw a curveball and get off topic completely, because we haven't mentioned independent contractor regulations have been approved by the White House, written by the Wage and Hour Division, and look for those to come out. They're not going to wait for Congress to come back in November. So one of the most important issues in employment law, who's an independent contractor, who's an employee, you're going to get the government's view within a couple of weeks.
The nominee, Jessica Luman, still not confirmed by the Senate, was expected to be before this recess. That did not occur. I agree with you. I think we'll see those proposed regs before we have a confirmed Wage Hour nominee. Second issue I have, I think that the Technical Advisory Committee report is going to be extraordinarily helpful to focus on how the uniform guidelines can apply to artificial intelligence. I think it's going to be a big part of our moving forward constructively and aiding employers in how they move forward. Nita, you get the last word.
I appreciate that. I think we've kind of beat this to death, but I think AI is an issue for employers. It's the issue for employers as far as they're using it in place in a lot of cases with live HR people. And the federal government is behind the curve on regulating it.
Well, listen, thanks for another great discussion. Those out there, if you haven't already, please subscribe, DC Insider Employer Update. We do this about every 2 weeks as developments warrant. And we also have some great guests. So we mentioned the commission, Commissioner Sonderling previously has been a guest here, and we're going to get some of the other EEOC representatives and other government agencies involved too. So with that, I think we should sign off. Thanks, Bert.
Thank you, David. Nita, nice to be with you.
Thank you, David and Bert.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. We look forward to the next update. For those that would like to connect with any of the lawyers from Fortney Scott, please reach out to them directly by visiting fortneyscott.com. On the website, you can also listen to previous podcast episodes, as well as pick up your copy of the DC Insider Report and sign up for future updates. Thanks so much for listening.